Comic Hour with your hosts, Andrew Glauner
and Chris Ramos.
Tonight, we cover She-Hulk by John Byrne. And you may ask, why are we covering She-Hulk by John Byrne? Well, there is a TV series that's getting picked up, She-Hulk. It's coming out very soon, in a couple weeks. And we wanted to talk about who She-Hulk is, kind of give a brief explainer, cover one of our favorite runs. But this run's not so much what's going to be covered in the show. It's going to be influenced by it. But this was one of my personal runs that I kind of read during, I think it was about a year ago, I read this and I went, wow, this is such a unique book. And I basically read it in a day. And I was like, I really gravitated towards the story, the voice, what they said about her. And I thought I would share that with our audience today. And is this your first time reading the material, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, some of the She-Hulk ones, which are collected in here, they started off with kind of like the way that She-Hulk originally started sort of stepping into the Marvel Universe, which was in 1985. And she didn't get her own series until about 4 years later in 1989.
Yeah.
So this one was, I've seen the covers. I think I maybe have read a couple of these here and there through the years, but nothing like this where, again, that's where I like the omnibus. They collect the whole run. So you can say, oh, cool. Like I kind of missed out on this when I was a kid of like picking up here or my friend had one and I read it or whatever. But She-Hulk wasn't one of those that I like regularly followed.
Sure. And I could see that as being kind of just the way he does covers in the art. It may seem to turn off people or give a misconception of what the story is trying to tell, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Or just it's a revealing cover or a revealing lead woman just for the sake of being that. But there's so much more in depth that the story goes into.
Well, yeah, and you always wonder what kind of stories behind the scenes go on about like editors or even artists saying, hey, I want to feature this character or hey, I want to like put a female lead right on the cover of the comic, just front and center, nothing behind her, no background,
right,
and just see how that sells, you know, and trying to think of it as like a not necessarily a marketing ploy,
right?
Because she was already gaining a little bit of her own following.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Like Stan Lee, he wrote the first issue. Her first appearance is in The Savage She-Hulk, number one, February 1980, with Stan Lee and John Buscema. And like that was such a great art style to start out with, kind of develop the character for a little bit. That's already come out in an omnibus, and we do encourage to check that out. But it didn't really start to grow in its own and She-Hulk developing her own voice until John Byrne decided to take on that role and start writing and drawing her.
Yeah, and you can tell correct as the omnibus is, it takes John Byrne's first story of She-Hulk, which was in the Marvel graphic novel series.
Yeah.
Marvel used to have, they didn't have like trade paperbacks. They didn't have omnibus. They didn't have collected editions or digital copies, obviously. In the 80s. So what they did was they made the Marvel graphic novel series. And what that was it gave artists and writers longer story runs. So instead of saying, hey, you have 15 pages in this comic, it was like you got 50 pages to tell a story. And they charged a little bit more, but it was also like a really big jump away from Marvel mainstream. So they didn't have to worry about, like, is this crossing over with some other story?
Yeah, they could kind of play with the continuity a bit.
Yeah, and they could just like tell their own run. So John Byrne did that. She-Hulk had her own run with the Marvel graphic novel in 1985.
Yeah.
And that's the very first one up in this Omni is just to say, hey, this is She-Hulk.
This is how he envisioned mm-hmm. her. And this was kind of like his pitch to the readers and everything. To Marvel is like, this is what I want to do for She-Hulk if I'm going to go on and continue to do this.
Yeah. And he wrote it also written and penciled by John Byrne. So he was also showing them, hey, I can write this comic too. For some reason, he just really latched on to her. He was the one who jumped her into the Fantastic Four at the time.
Yep.
And he just wanted to make sure that character was becoming a strong female lead. But John Byrne was always really interested in working on the female leads and making sure they had their time in the spotlight.
Absolutely. And this was also a time where John Byrne was doing several series. He is known for his, as you described, Chris, when we were talking, like just his fast style, but it's really effective and concise. Like he's known for his like X-Men artistry, and he's did the Fantastic Four runs, Avengers. There's not a lot of properties John Byrne hasn't done.
No, and he's still running strong.
You know, he's still around to this day. Yeah, I don't think he's super active anymore, but he's still with us, and it's really cool to continue to talk about his stories and whatnot.
So. I mean, his strongest, most popular run is probably X-Men.
Yeah.
I would say
by far.
Because
he took over
Days
for
Days of Future Past and
things
like that. Because
he took over for Dave Cockrum when he left.
Yes. And then he moved into doing Fantastic Four, and then he moved into doing She-Hulk, and then he moved back into doing like Superman. I mean,
his Superman run is really good. Well, that just came out in collected editions.
Yes.
And,
Definitely a fan favorite, but within the wheelhouse of the working industry, you know, like Andrew said, he was just known as a fast artist. And when you're in comics, if you could pump out four pages instead of two, you were sought after.
Then he has a really good voice, and he does both the writes and draws, which is a rare combo. Not a lot of those people are around.
Well, and some of his costume designs and just some of the ways that he drew certain characters, they still kept that up for a very long time.
Yeah.
Even with other other artists, they said, this is sort of the layout. A lot of people don't know, but even in Marvel and DC, they would have entire books of characters and for the writers and artists.
Oh, sure. Like the history of the Marvel universe and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they would say, here is the Invisible Woman. This is her current outfit. This is her current hairstyle. This is how tall she is. If you drew her next to someone else, this is how tall they are. So it was sort of like a cheat sheet, like a recipe book for artists. And John Byrne helped develop a lot of those styles.
And the more we're talking about it, I was watching some recent interviews with John Byrne, and I guess it was Mark Grimwald that was like, hey, you should try out the She-Hulk book. I think you would have a really good voice for it. You know, you just introduced her in the Fantastic Four. I think it's time to get her into like a solo series.
And he's like, okay, let's try
this. Yeah, all right. Yeah, let's try it. And he hadn't had a lot of opportunity to flex his like comedy muscles or anything. So it was a really good opportunity for him to show what that is.
And what he can do.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess going back, like, what was your first impressions of this book?
So
this omnibus, I should say.
You know, I just with everything, every other omnibus or any other collected edition, you know, the first two or three issues are usually trying to set the stage a little bit. And I don't think there's many comic book characters that continued on how they originally started.
Absolutely.
You know, so for She-Hulk, I think what they wanted to do was just to say she's part of the Hulk family.
Yeah.
And they just really kept connecting her to the Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
Bruce Banner.
Yeah. I guess
is her cousin.
Yes. So, for those that don't know, or you're going to go watch the show, Jennifer Walters is the cousin of She-Hulk, like Chris said, but she gets the Hulk powers from a blood transfusion.
Yeah.
Because she got into like a medical emergency or an accident or something. And the only way to bring her back is with a blood transfusion. And, you know, who's the closest blood relative to her? Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner
is also the Hulk. Dun, dun, dun. The only thing that is incredibly different about the two of them, though, is that She-Hulk retains her consciousness. It might be a little enhanced. And she builds up more confidence, gets taller. But she has all the strength of the Hulk. She does have the ability, the more angrier she gets, the stronger she does, but most of the time she keeps it in check and she keeps a level head. And, later on after this run, she would become the attorney at law, which is covered in a whole nother run. That's what the show is based on.
Yeah. The Disney Plus show is based more on her being a lawyer.
Yes. This is more about Pallyground being adventures and really investing in the character of She-Hulk and developing who she is.
Yeah, and even at the very beginning, this Omni opens up that she's part of the Fantastic Four. So it's you don't really need to read that or know the background, but they're just trying to say like, all right, this is her. And if you think about the mid 80s, at that time there were only a handful of female leads that had their own book.
Yeah.
They always had them as strong female characters.
Right.
Like Phoenix or, you know, even Invisible Woman or, you know, you start thinking about any of the characters in like DC, like Wonder Woman and stuff.
Yeah, you know? Supergirl.
Yeah, they've always had like strong female characters, but it was still a time when they weren't ready to give everyone their own series.
Sure, so, always living in the shadow of the predominant character, I guess.
Yeah, and this was like exactly what that is. It's an offshoot from The Incredible Hulk. And, you know, you can find some stories online that, you know, we were even looking up of like the TV show, The Incredible Hulk TV show.
Yeah, with Lou Ferrigno.
Lou Ferrigno was super popular at the time, and they were just competing with what's the next biggest show. So they were like, what's the next character we can do, or how can we change this around? And what was it, the Bionic Woman,
yep, because like the $6 million man was coming out, and they're like, oh, we need to capitalize on this, so they did the Bionic Woman, and then Marvel's like, oh, We gotta get ahead of this.
We need a female now. So She-Hulk was born as a side effect of just a marketing ploy. But then John Byrne
found the voice for her.
Found the voice for her. Yeah,
absolutely. So yeah, it's really cool, Brian, just to explore how she thinks about things in the Marvel universe, how she acts and interacts with all the different characters, and developing a love interest, I guess, with a Man-Wolf, I believe it was. Yeah,
and Hercules.
Yeah. Well, what was it? Yeah, Hercules a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. But Jonah Jameson's son.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was really cool to like see that happen and just kind of figure out what's going on, because she's not a damsel in distress at all during this book.
No.
Very seldomly, like, she needs help, but she's one that's mostly saving the day from other people.
So they kind of really emphasize her strength, and that's something that they wanted to, I think, to just lay the foundation right away. Like, she is super strong. She's really, really competent. But she's also, like you said, when the Hulk first transformed, he was sort of a lumbering, slow monster.
Yes.
And I think they wanted to purposely set this up as she's still a very powerfully spoken woman. Mm-hmm. So even though she's now super strong, she still has that like playful atmosphere to her. And I think they really played on like her physique is also like emphasized and strengthened to, I guess, like peak human performance a little bit. So
absolutely. She wasn't like stronger than the Hulk, but she was at peak human performance.
Yeah. For a female. So then of course she's like the perfect weightlifter strength, 7 foot form, you know, and,
but could hold her own.
Yeah. So she started playing on that. So I think, I wonder that they joke that it helped with book sales. I wonder if it did, because almost every single cover is her talking to the audience. So now we can at least approach that a little bit. Yep,
and that's a great segue. So She-Hulk is at least one of the first early on characters in Marvel and comics that to break the fourth wall. How would you describe the fourth wall, Chris?
So I want to just touch a little bit on covers first. So usually when you look at the cover of a comic, there's either like a fictitious scene set up where a villain is like dangling a hero over a cliff or something, and you're like, well, that's kind of interesting. You know, it looks like he's losing. And then when you read the comic, that never happened. It was just like cover.
Yeah, and the scene never really came up, or it'd be a different angle or a different perspective.
Yeah, it's like being a trailer in a movie, yes. And then when you watch the movie, like, that never really happened.
No, it just looks cool.
So that's one way to do a cover. The other way to do a cover is to just have some sort of action scene of just all your heroes fighting, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, that's cool. There's a lot of energy in here. Mm-hmm. So She-Hulk was always looking right at you off the cover, and she was always talking about, like, isn't this funny? Or look at the predicament I'm in now, or you should buy this comic.
Mm-hmm.
So people started picking up right away that the fourth wall was, even her very first issue was literally her holding a comic, her comic.
Yes, her own, like her first appearance.
From Marvel Comics Group. Yeah. So that was her first issue. And so on this new series, which is the Sensational She-Hulk,
mm-hmm.
she's holding that and she says, okay, now this is your second chance. If you didn't buy my book this time, I'm going to come to your house and rip up all your X-Men.
Yeah.
So everyone was like, what the heck?
A fictitious character is going to come to your house.
But she's looking right at you as the audience.
Yes.
John Byrne, who used to do the X-Men, of course, throws in his little X-Men plug.
Right.
And it was like, buy this book. And it was just really funny because at the time it was like, no character was staring at you off the cover and saying, buy this book.
Right.
So the fourth wall is the wall between us, the reader, and them, the comic book world. So like the fourth wall, we were just saying, if you're on a stage or if you're in a movie, the wall behind you and then the two walls on the side are the three walls. And then the fourth wall is the one of the performance. You're connecting with the audience and the audience is watching everything happen through the fourth wall.
Yes.
And usually you kind of get to that, like, don't look at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't look off the stage. Don't make eye contact with the viewers because you're going to ruin that suspension of disbelief, you know.
Right.
But She-Hulk, I don't know. John Byrne just
said
let's
do it. We're going to do the exact opposite. We're going to lean into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like almost every five pages or so, she's making some sort of comment to the reader.
Right. Or even John Byrne himself will communicate with She-Hulk or write himself in the book or make comments back and forth fighting with the editors and things like that and the artists and stuff. But he is the artist. So.
Well, and isn't there one time like, so on the cover, she's always in like a swimsuit
or
she's always in some sort of, I don't know, scantily clad sort of problem thing. And one issue, she was like wearing a sweater or something.
Right.
And she was like, what are you doing? Don't you think, or don't you know that this comic doesn't sell with just the story?
Right.
So this kind of makes fun about it. So she's always.
That's always fun. Yeah. Right. There's even like editorial notes. Not bad. But I could have used a few more Toad ships or Tom. Well, we'll take a good look at the ones you got, boss. I'm not drawing this fleet again. But John, if you don't do, I quit, Bob. So it'll be like right in the middle of the thing. And you're like, what?
and it's really, really funny because she uses it as a way to like guide the story.
Yeah,
so like,
she's almost like another narrator.
Yeah. So like when you're reading it, it's almost like after a while, it becomes like something you look forward to. Like, how is she going to do this time?
Right. And such a unique way because you don't read that style all the time. And it's just refreshing to see. And it's like, oh, okay, what's happening? And throughout this whole run, he keeps that continuity and this really good pacing and voice just all throughout this run. And it's very consistent and it makes you laugh. Like, I don't laugh a lot when I'm reading my comics, but I always enjoy it when I do. And I'm like, I see what you're doing there. Okay.
Well, like some pages, she's actually literally ripping the page.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, poking her head around the corner of a blank page.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, what's going on? You didn't know what to draw on this page? You know, and it's just a blank page with her just standing there.
Or she'll go, more Toad Men, burn. Yeah. God dang it.
She'll like yell at him.
Yeah.
So, you know, the big idea too is that we are reading this comic in preparation or just in in connection with the Disney Plus show that's coming out. And we've seen the first trailer. It's already exciting to know that she...
There's a wink and a nod towards
it. Yeah, that she is going to be breaking the fourth wall in some capacity. A lot of people know Deadpool breaks the fourth wall.
Sure.
He came out a few years after this.
Mm-hmm.
So she was the original. But in the show, when the first teaser came out,
yep.
She wasn't breaking the fourth wall. And then everyone was like, what's going on?
Right. Yeah.
How could you have the show without having her
break the fourth wall? And then you'll see a little bit more of it. You're like, okay, she's winking and nodding at you.
Yeah.
Okay, it's happening. And it's such a good feeling to just honor that the source material and Byrne and all the things and that he was able to accomplish with this book and all that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point of taking a story, turning it into a TV show. You still have to kind of acknowledge where that story came from.
Absolutely. And I think even in Dan Slott's run that kind of the show was based on, he was still influenced by this run. I mean, it's a pretty seminal story for her that he spent so much time. I think, I don't know, the run went on for quite a while.
Yeah, so in this omnibus,
I think there's at least three.
There's about 750 pages or so,
right?
725. And it starts out, her run, Sensational She-Hulk number one, came out in May of 89.
Mm-hmm.
And John Byrne ended his run in 93.
Yeah.
But, you know, I believe her...
3 years, yeah.
I believe her series continued on. I don't think it was called Sensational She-Hulk. Yeah. That may have ended with Byrne.
Yeah.
And then it moved on to some of her other storylines. And she was always a really good character to jump into other groups and other team-ups.
Yeah.
They always are like, oh, geez, I want She-Hulk, you know?
Right, yeah. I think she did a little bit with, like, X-Factor. And, like, Peter David had a big run on her. That was the latest She-Hulk omnibus to come out where she's, like, a bounty hunter. And
she's
like
the tank.
Yeah, she's the tank.
The tank thrower. Throw her up front. She's the tank.
Right. But I love this run. It's such a good story. It gets wacky at times. Like she teams up with, she goes into space with like this space trucker. And you're like, what's happening right now? But it's just a lot of adventuring and just interacting with different characters that you would never expect. And it just really getting, just really having a lot of fun with it. And that's what comics are about sometimes. You don't have to be super serious all the time, but you still want to do cool things.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to note that she is always She-Hulk.
Yes. Yeah, she doesn't like being back into her own normal self.
Yeah, so she doesn't have to be angry.
Yes.
Or there's no like big catalyst. She took another transfusion and said it's permanent. And of course, there's always storylines where she's not. Yeah. But for the most part, I mean, 99% of the time, she is She-Hulk the time.
Yeah.
And so she really, sometimes they play on the story of like her sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously she can't walk down a New York street without like being 7 feet tall and green.
Right.
So they do play on that a little bit. They do play on like, you know, her just accepting her role in the whole Marvel universe.
Yeah. She's always trying to figure out where she fits in.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
it took a while for her to find that, but it's kind of part of following her hero's journey.
Well, and I think if she was written nowadays, and that's what we're all kind of waiting to see with the TV show is, you know, are they going to play on those themes of sticking out in a crowd and, you know, the themes of not of being mutated. I mean, she's been changed.
Right.
She was born a human and she's been changed. So how is that going to affect just her life?
Yeah. Seemed like she, they're still kind of playing on some of the themes from like when I watched her, like in the Fantastic Four cartoons or in the Incredible Hulk cartoon where he's a mentor to her still.
Right.
Trying to guide her through the ropes. There is that whole montage in the trailer. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. But the thing is, it was Professor Hulk that was teaching her versus just regular Hulk.
Yeah, right.
Which is fine, I guess, but I kind of miss the Savage Hulk and doing such kind of things.
Yeah.
Maybe someday we'll get back to it.
Well, maybe they're kind of prepping her to be the logical Hulk and then he's going to start
maybe transitioning
or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see how that kind of plays out. But that also is why she's been put in a role of like a strong female lawyer.
Very and, empowered and things like that.
She's an attorney. She has an actual education. She's very smart about what she does. And of course, they hire her to be an attorney for superheroes.
Right.
Because they're like, well.
And that's why it was such a cool moment. If people have kind of figured it out that Daredevil's going to make an appearance in the show. And it's like, oh my God, they're coming together.
Ah. I mean, they would know who each other is.
Yeah.
But he's not ever going to say he's a superhero.
No.
But she just can't get around it.
Yes.
I mean, she
they're going to collide and it's going to be great. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to fan out.
Another part of the book that I bookmarked was towards the end.
Yeah.
Well, not towards, maybe 75% of the way through. She-Hulk kind of goes back and forth with the pages and the costumes and like what her background is. And then she's like grabbing on the cover. She like has no clothes. So she grabs the comics code and covers herself with, she like tears off the comics code, which again, the comics code is there to make sure there is no nudity. So then she like uses it as a towel, which is really funny.
And then she has this whole dialogue with probably Byrne or the editor. I think it's the editor.
Yeah. She says, sorry, I know you're the editor of my book and all, but you know, if I stop moving here, then it's going to show what will be bigger trouble with the comics code than we are.
And just having that conversation in the comic.
Yeah. So then while she's trying to like cover herself by jumping rope really fast. So it's like making a blur. So you can't see that she has no clothes on.
And it's almost very meta.
Yeah.
And we haven't really did a lot of meta comics, but like, this is a great example of when it gets like, you're talking to the audience or you're breaking that fourth wall. You're making it meta-textual, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So the editor tears the jump rope away and says, you know, Tom DeFalco wouldn't ever have allowed this in the first place if you weren't actually wearing something behind those blurred lines. So then when she grabs the jump rope away, it looks all of a sudden she's wearing like a swimsuit. So you're like, oh geez, you know, it is kind of funny that she always talks about the Legion of Decency, like she's going to get like a code violation or something.
Right.
So they have fun with it.
Yeah. And it's nothing degrading. It's nothing like that. And maybe if you think that is, that's your opinion. But I think it was really trying to play around with what they can get away with and what they can say about what was going on at the time. And while trying to make her lead character and experimenting what a female lead is.
Well, I mean, I think they were just purposefully putting that out all the time so that people would, number one, they're not trying to hide that she's a female.
Yep.
And they're not trying to hide that she has a very good physique, you know, for comics. And that's like,
yep,
most of the time, all the comic book females were
exactly,
you know,
exploiting that.
Yeah. Written as like a great gymnast or something like that.
Yeah.
But at the same moment, it was like, hey, here's some fun to sort of bring light to this so that you don't think we're just trying to kind of like over-sexualize She-Hulk.
Exactly.
So here's some fun. Like, all right, everyone, look, you know, she's she's being goofy and she gets her hair done.
But then John Byrne's like, all right, I'm going to do it my way.
Yep. And he turns it around where she's fighting aliens in space and, you know, taking on real comic book themes. So
yeah,
it is funny that they're just right off the bat like, yes, okay, we know what we're drawing.
And
on the same
token, she still fights strong villains.
Right.
She still fights Thundra, she still fights Xanadu, she still fights, I think she runs into the leader at some points, maybe not on this run but other sides. She's still fighting like space villains.
She's out with like Guardians of the Galaxy and fighting Skrulls and stuff.
Yeah,
so, you know, she's doing
X-Men villains, things like that. So she's still honing her own.
yeah, definitely. And they want you to read the comic. So, you know, to get you through the first few pages of just silliness.
Yeah.
Cool. Then you're into the comic for the rest of the run.
It was a classic Marvel run. It was very experimental, I think, at the time. Not a lot of other people were doing it, but I think it was John Byrne did a good like trailblazing run to set the tone for the character and what is possible. for this character or what is possible for these themes going forward.
Yes.
So, yeah, She-Hulk, the Disney Plus show comes out on August 18th. We really encourage you to check out the show, read this book, figure out, you know, we try to explain who She-Hulk is and one of our favorite runs and just kind of identify what some of her strengths were and what we liked about the character.
Yeah. And, you know, the overall takeaway, I think, would be if you see a show coming up or if you see a character introduced in a movie or you see some other comic that's got a brand new run, we are really pushing everyone to find the backstory, find out what that character's origin is and where they started and why. And that'll lead you down a really good path to say, oh, wow, so she started with John Byrne. So who is John Byrne? You know, and just kind of right. keep going. And you really start seeing a big connection with the comic book world. And that introduction happened from one character that you liked and you wanted to learn more about, now turned into 10 characters that you like and you want to learn more about. And that's the whole point.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, this omnibus, it's a little hard to find these days, but I think they'll start reprinting this eventually and it'll get around. You can still get some, read some of the stories in, on Hoopla and trade paperbacks and things like that. So we really encourage you to go read it however you can. But we love this omnibus. This is a really good collective edition.
And how?
Yeah. And that's been another exciting episode of BAMPOW Comic Hour. This is Andrew Glauner.
And Chris Ramos.
Signing off.